J.D. Stetton. Here we are again. Still perplexed. I am, at least. How are you doing today?
I am perplexed very well, thank you. I think is the response.
I don't know if you have this, but I like audiobooks and podcasts. And as far as this spiritual journey, I feel like I always need to be like grasping onto the next thing. So when I'm going through a book, like I just went through, I just listened to Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach.
Tara Brach.
That's a good one. When I'm going through an audiobook, I want to get to the end of it. It's like, okay, I just want to, kind of be able to check the box. Right? But then as soon as I'm done with that book, it's like, okay, now I need something else. I feel like there's this, I don't know if you call it like spiritual materialism, which is a term I've heard used, but it's like, I feel like I always need to be on to the next thing. And I don't know if you have that experience at all, or if you can be at peace with having, larger gaps.
Well, it's just because you're so spiritual, Morty, that you just need, spirit needs more and more and more. I'm teasing, and it totally resonates with me too. One of the many paradoxes of being and of anything that we treat or interact with in some way as a doing, it's hard to, I don't know, to not be caught in that cycle in some way. Start, finish, start again. And it's almost like, what else is there, right? Like, on the one hand, it's like, oh, could I just be happy with the last spiritual book I read and be here? On the other, sure, you finish one thing, it's time to start another, whether that's with a book or, I don't know, sometimes the cyclic nature of you finish eating and it's like right away, it's like, oh, there's a dirty plate I have to wash. Like, couldn't it just done? Or there's a minute, it's like, well, no, because that's not quite the way it goes. So like so much of this, I don't know that there's necessarily an answer or a change as much as like trying to hold the paradox of like, on the one hand, all this spiritual stuff that I'm reading in Radical Acceptance, it's like, just radically accept everything now. I don't need to pick up a new spiritual book or start on a new course. On the other, like, I'm a human whose mind works in time and in thought and in future and in prep and in planning. And yeah, like, of course, I'm going to want to continue to deepen this practice or set myself up for more doing, more learning. Like, yeah, we were talking earlier, this mini retreat I did yesterday. I'm like, I'm already like, yeah, how do I make this into a weekly practice? Right. Do I start a course with these people? And it's just like, yep, we're going to do that, I think.
Right. Yeah. I have that with physical fitness also. Like, I just did a training program on the Peloton, which was around like power zones, like building your power zones. And it was 5 weeks and it was, three times a week. And it was great. And then I was looking forward to finishing the program. And I finished it. It's like, okay, now I'm going to take a break. Right. But then 2 days later, I was like, I need to have something, the next thing. So I started another program, like, which is now an 8 week program. There's something about, we could say it's like high achieving people where you always want to be like achieving and doing something, which sounds high achieving would be a compliment in our culture. It probably also stems maybe feeling insufficient, like, or in just in and of ourselves, that we have to be like doing something and accomplishing, feeling like we're accomplishing and like working towards something, instead of just being. There's probably some dose of, some part of that, which is, also drives my need to like just be onto the next project or thing.
Speaking of onto the next project or thing, this course also works that way. The Course in Miracles, right?
Right. Every day.
It's sort of, progressive. There's always something next to read.
I thought we'd talk this week about lesson 16 and 17, which are about neutral thoughts and neutral things. There's a concept that they propose, which is that we have no neutral thoughts. And it says, right, that this idea is a beginning step in dispelling the belief that your thoughts have no effect. Everything you see is the result of your thoughts. There is no exception to this fact. Thoughts are not big or little, powerful or weak. They're merely true or false. Those that are true create their own likeness. Those that are false make theirs. And then it talks about how there's no such thing as idle thoughts, of just, thoughts that you just have. They're either good or they're bad. They're not neutral. That's kind of interesting. That's an interesting idea that if we observe our thoughts, that we'll see that they're not actually, it's not actually neutral. It's not just, oh, this sky is blue. It's either, wow, the sky is so beautiful, or it's the sky is gray and I hope there aren't going to be, you know, the weather isn't going to mess up my plans. I mean, what did you think when you read that about that there are no neutral thoughts, anything that brought up for you?
Well, because I have no neutral thoughts, I had reactions or responses to it. Well, I think, you know, this line in particular, when hearing you read it just now, everything you see is the result of your thoughts. I think we have, there's research that shows very clearly that there are more, I guess, directionally, more neurons going from our brain to our eye than the other way around. So we are actively creating our world, probably even more than we are perceiving it. And our minds are predictive in nature. And obviously it's kind of feedback loop where we see things, we take it in, some processing happens, and then we push it back out. You know, it's an interesting thought or perception to sit with, that everything we see is really the result of our thoughts. And in that way, our thoughts really are shaping our realities. That alone feels like an interesting reminder or perspective to kind of hang on to and just think about how much we are creating our realities, because we are pushing from our brain to our sensory organs in a lot of ways. So that's a trippy thought. And then this idea that none of them are neutral, also kind of trip and thinking in some evolutionary terms, one of the chief jobs of our minds and our systems, if not the chief job, maybe, is to keep us safe, to keep us safe from harm, to identify threats, that kind of radar function of the mind of scanning and looking. So in a lot of ways, like, yeah, there aren't neutral thoughts. Our minds are really built to find, like, is this life-threatening or life-saving in any given scenario? A change of the wind, a scent, water, when it comes to food, is it poison? Is it not? Is someone threatening us? So really leaning into that part of ourselves that is just constantly evaluating good, bad, dangerous, safe, pull, push.
One thought that came to mind, you know, with all this talking about good and bad is, you know, the Genesis story, right? There are two trees that it mentions in the Garden of Eden, right? And one is, we call it the tree of knowledge, but it's actually, that's not actually what the Bible says. The Bible says it's the tree of knowledge of good and bad, right? Or good and evil. You know, when Adam and Eve, or Eve and then Adam, like, ate from that tree, it was all of a sudden, right? Why was the first thing they realized is, all of a sudden they realized that they're naked, right? And that might be, like, wrong. What does that mean, wrong? It means that there's now all of a sudden there's a right and there's a wrong. In some ways, like, man's fall from grace is defined as the, I guess, the not ability, but maybe the nature to define things as good and bad. You know, animals don't do that. They don't have something as good or bad. It's like, either there's, for my dog, like, there's either food in the bowl, or there's not food in the bowl. That's it. Right. So that's kind of interesting, that this idea of, like, that this good, bad thing is what happened. It was part of, you know, the evolution of man. And now the restoration of man comes from somehow giving up that notion of good and bad.
Yeah. Giving up the notion of good and bad. She says a little bit later on in this chapter, a neutral result is impossible because a neutral thought is impossible. That in some way we're not capable of thinking or pushing out thoughts that have a neutral charge. How does that strike you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know what to do with that, because I think the answer is, okay, well, anytime you're having a thought, it's good. It's not neutral, right? It's creating some illusion for you, right? And so therefore what? Therefore I shouldn't think? Well, I can't do that, right? That is like maybe this idea of like in a deep meditative state or enlightenment, like, you know, you can just, I don't know, not be thinking and just be experiencing things in real time, right? But I feel like at this point, like we said before, it's a stairway, right? So this isn't, this is leading you in a direction, right? And at this point, maybe all you're asked to do is just become aware of the fact that your thoughts are not neutral, right? And just so as you're aware of some things, like, well, you know, I'm not just looking at it at a table, like I'm either thinking about how it, like, do I like the grain? Or maybe I see a scratch and I'm thinking like, oh, like the scratch, how did that happen? Or, you know, I guess my brain, because we have no neutral thoughts, is craving like more, you know, from this idea, like, well, what do I do with that? That there's no good or bad. But I think I'm kind of okay with this idea of like, well, let me just note, you know, as my thoughts come up to say like, oh, is that good? Or am I thinking of something positive about that? Or am I thinking negative and noticing that every thought is a judgment?
That leads me to the end of this chapter. And it's something, I don't remember if this is the first time she applies this, but she every so often says, if strain is experienced, 3 practice periods is enough. The length of the exercise period should also be reduced if there is discomfort. And I think that's just kind of an interesting note, right? Like, I don't know, you've trained with personal trainers at different points. Could you imagine if one of them was like, oh, and if there's ever, you know, if there's any discomfort, just stop. What kind of personal training, you know, like you wouldn't gain or grow. And I mind you, I'm not saying this as a challenge. I really appreciate what she's doing. And I'm highlighting it because it seems like an interesting didactic tool. And a way of taking on new ideas, perhaps, in that, again, speaking from one kind of achiever type to another, people who like to work for their whatever it is that we do, there's something a little bit radical even about being told like, oh, if there's any strain, just stop. If you feel any discomfort, I mean, strain feels like, okay, maybe don't strain, but discomfort. If there's no discomfort in weightlifting, you're not gaining, to my knowledge. And I'm not saying spiritual work is a perfect comparison to weightlifting, but it feels like such an interest. I don't know. How do you feel about this direction of like, if there's any discomfort, stop?
Well, again, mine goes to the Genesis story. Because the punishment for eating from this tree of good and bad, of knowing
by
good and bad,
the sweat of your brow,
is strain.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, right, that now you're going to have to strain, right? And I also wonder if you have to strain, or is it because you think you have, you now you think in terms of good and bad, you think you have to strain. You know, now it becomes about like, well, now there's a good and bad. And so now there's like, there's an efficient way that I could be using my days or not. You know, again, like, you know, a shark, I think, I mean, they don't eat like that many times, I feel like, over the course of a year, or maybe it's a whale. There's some, like, there are creatures that go 6 months without eating, right?
No, I think you're right.
So they eat and they feed. Right. And now it's a week later and they're just swimming around. Are they thinking, oh, I'm so lazy, I should be like doing something more? Or is it just, I'm fed, I don't have to do it, you know, I'm okay. I have, you know, when my body needs it, then I'll do the next thing. Right? But I feel like with us, another thing, and this is definitely more so in, you know, in our time when I think there probably is more freedom, right, than you had in 1,000 years ago when, you know, you actually did have to make sure that you were doing something to get food, you know, for that day. That, yeah, this maybe that's also this illusion of we need to strain. We feel that we need to strain in order to eat our bread, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, that definitely feels like among the legacy burdens of Judeo-Christianity and all that, it this notion that we have to earn it somehow. Mm-hmm. We have to sweat for it. Yeah. And yeah, maybe not. At the very least, it's a nice call. And in a program where it really feels like it's designed to, in a lot of ways, retrain our brains and our habits, and thinking about doing that in this way that feels very gentle and forgiving of the human animal. It's kind of a nice balm to that like constant work motion.
Yeah, and this is different, right? This it could be that building physical muscle is not the same thing as building spiritual muscle. I mean, in some ways, the task of spiritual growth is breaking down muscle. Mm. that we've strengthened over the course of our lives, right? Ultimately, it's Tara Brach was saying in Radical Acceptance that, you know, when she also lived in an ashram after college for 10, 15 years, right? And she would meet with these masters and say, like, what can I do? What else can I do to achieve enlightenment? And they would say, just relax. It's like, okay, yeah, but.
Right? Right. Like, What can I do?
That concept is just very difficult for us to relate to in general, especially in, you know, American Western culture, where it is so much of a focus on doing and achieving. It's like, it's hard for me to even like wrap my brain around that the way you need to achieve this is by relaxing.
Yeah. Or right. Like there isn't anything to achieve, you know, like another formulation.
Oh, right.
That is like, there's right, not even right. anything like,
yeah. What are you achieving? Right. The whole thing of achieving is
right.
Not,
it's not even, yeah. I was, as you know, I was in, or on, as they say, on Long Island last week, with family. And my second cousin adopted a dog a few years ago. I haven't seen him. This is my first time seeing him in a while and meeting the dog. And she's an Australian cattle dog terrier mix. And this dog, I only, you know, spent like 2 or 3 days with her, but you do not see this dog without a tennis ball in her mouth. Mm. And I've worked like on farms with cattle dogs who like to work, but it's compulsive. She just walks around the house, like dropping the ball at people's feet, nudging their hands or their knees to play and throw it. And she will go until she's so exhausted she can't play anymore, but she still holds the ball in her mouth and pants. Hmm. And if she's holding the ball and you throw another ball, she'll chase the other ball, but can't release the ball in her mouth. And she barks at this other ball and then comes back. And watching it and just thinking of that or as like a metaphor for this kind of restless mind that to me, like I see my mind in that way sometimes, like a border collie or a cattle dog, of just this like compulsion, like it has to be working, it has to be improving. And I think very much this chapter of there are no neutral thoughts, like damn straight there are no neutral thoughts. I'm either like doing and getting, and if I'm not, then I'm slipping or falling or receding. So, and just seeing this dog and being like, oh my God, like Celine, do you just want to like chill out and I'll pet you for a minute? Do you want to drink a water? Do you just want to nap? Like give it up. It must be exhausting. It's exhausting for everyone else to be around you. Like you must be wiped. And this family is happy to feed and coddle and love you, even if you didn't do a stitch of work. Like you don't need to chase this stupid ball all day. And yet she like is so set on it. And yeah, just feeling that my own restlessness.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to see from the outside of how ridiculous it is.
Right.
Like you would look at this dog and you'd be like, dude, just chill out, dog. Like, great, you've fetched a few times, you gotten a good run, Super. Now, like, I don't know, be a dog, get pets, take naps, go smell things, pee on things, like live your life.
Right.
But how for her, I'm sure in whatever way dog cognition is, it's just like must chase ball.
and
that's what we're doing. Must chase whatever, spirituality, success, happiness. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we also have that thing about the doing, right? So it's because in some ways, so let's start with this idea that there's no such thing as neutral thoughts, right? Like my thoughts about myself, if I'm honest, like they're rarely positive, right? Like they're, but usually it's like from the moment I wake up, it's like, okay, here are the things that I need to do, right? So let's say exercise, right? So instead of thinking that I'm lazy or I'm gonna, you know, like my, or whatever, I'm not gonna achieve my fitness goals, like, okay, I need to work out, right? We think that the doing is a path out of the negative thoughts, negative thinking, right? But at the end of the doing, it's not that you now, like it's not that you necessarily have a positive thought. It's like, that's what you, the doing just gets you to break even, right? It's like, okay, now I can, now I can check the box out. All right, I worked out, you know, I my Oura Ring tells me I burned enough calories, you know, today, right? So now I can give up on the, that particular guilt for today, right? But how long does that last? It lasts until I wake up tomorrow morning. Yeah. And then it's all the same stuff. So I wonder if like that doing also, it's not directly related to your example of the dog, but I feel like lots of times we think that doing is a solution to thinking or to a thought, you know, that we're having.
Yeah. I mean,
agree, and disagree?
I totally like it. I just like, thought sparked another thought about like this book that I just finished yesterday called The Sympathizer, about it's a piece of fiction. I think it won the Pulitzer and something else, like super well, you know, highly acclaimed, about an agent for the Vietnamese communists, you know, spy embedded in sort of the American Vietnamese faction. And brilliant book, tons of great social, cultural, political crit in there. And in one of the ending scenes, he's being sort of like re-educated, tortured by his communist overlords. And they ask him this kind of trick question of what's greater than freedom. And the answer, and I think it's like a quote from Ho Chi Minh or something, is like, nothing is greater than freedom, which he says. And they say like, yes, but you're still missing something. And long story, but they go on torturing him for quite a while until he realizes that nothing is greater than freedom. That it's not nothing is greater, it's nothing. Nothing as an entity. And he has this like break, and the way they torture him, it's brutal, but it's passive. They basically just keep him awake for days indefinitely, and when he nods off, they wake him right up, and that really breaks down the mind and spirit in a lot. Till he gets this, and as he says it, he's like crying and laughing, and they free him and they embrace, and he's just ball like tears of joy that he had this, that nothing is. So I mentioned that in response to what you just said, because of how I think hard it is for a mind that's so hardwired to something or some things or things, activities, doing, to like let go or shift into this like being or nothingness. And I'm not recommending anyone torture anyone or sleep deprivation, just to be clear, but just really how kind of tough of a nut that is to crack for this border collie mind, this doing mind, this sweat of the brow mind and mindset that we have. And maybe all the more interesting, she doesn't recommend torture or sleep deprivation. She recommends taking it easy. And if you feel discomfort, dropping it as another inroad.
Right. I like it. Well, I think for now, I mean, maybe to our exercise, if for people, homework is just maybe just to note the flavor of our thoughts, you know, it's that, that it's everything is either good or bad. And flavor is probably a good analogy for describing it, right? Because everything you taste, there's, I mean, water, I guess water is neutral, you know, and interesting that that the goal of karate would be mind like water. But even water, right? It's like, is it really neutral, or if it's cold, it's good. If it's room temp, if it's like lukewarm, it's like, eh, that's not so good, right? There still is.
Yeah, if it's the tap water in Austin, it's hard to drink, you know, yeah. If it's the tap water in New York or yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. So just noticing the flavor of our thoughts, and maybe that's a good task for this week.
Yeah, I think these lessons 16 and 17 very much remind me of the Anthony DeMello story, which I'm sure at some point in one of our episodes we've quoted with the guru. It comes to him for, you know, life advice, and the guru just writes down on the paper awareness, and the guy's like, or is it Anthony Anthony DeMello. Anyway, the guy says, well, can you elaborate? And the guru just writes awareness awareness. And there's a power to that, to just noticing, like Morty said, what's the flavor? What, notice that there is a flavor, noticing that, like, oh, my thought about this is charged. I walked outside and said, ah, what a beautiful day, or it's cold. And the flavor is something that we impart to it. I mean, there are many flavors in the water. There are many truths. When I walk outside today, I could note the sun or the smell or the air quality or the whatever. And the thing I choose to say, it's something that I picked, and it's a flavor that, yeah, that I gave to it as much as it sort of had inherently. And just, yeah, just trying to catch that, notice that when we can. Yeah, just an interesting game to play.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will watch our flavorful thoughts.
Until That's next right. time. That's right. Until next time, enjoy your flavored thoughts and your flavored sparkling water.
Yeah, I'll choose mint chocolate chip. All right. I'll talk to you
later. All righty. Okay. See you, Morty.
See ya. Bye.